today, Australia's crypto love affair. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Adrian from Independent Reserve. Hello, Adrian.
It's a pleasure to be here again, Martin.
Yeah, it seems like only yesterday we were talking last, but boy, a lot has been going on. And one of the most interesting things is you've just released a report about Australians and their relationship with crypto.
Yeah, so we do one of these each year. It's called the Independent Reserve Cryptocurrency Index. And basically what it is, it's a representative survey of, I think, 1,100 Australians. And it's representative in terms of age, gender, demographics, geography. And it's basically a finger on the pulse of cryptocurrency in Australia. So it measures people's perceptions of cryptocurrency, measures adoption, and just basically how people feel about cryptocurrency and how that progresses from one year to the next.
And it's really interesting because it is a very important survey insofar that, of course, it's a fast-moving sector. And the thing that struck me first was the awareness of crypto is just way up from where it was. And you know, within that, of course, Bitcoin is up there, but there's also awareness of some of the other coins as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I guess cryptocurrencies have now been around for quite a while. So Bitcoin launched in 2009, so it's now in its 11th year. And I guess the longer they exist, the more people gain awareness, the more they become comfortable with the idea of cryptocurrencies. You know, the more they become, I guess, an accepted asset class that you may hold in a, you know, just a normal balanced portfolio. And yeah, that really adds to the awareness and the acceptance, I think.
Yeah, it is fascinating. And then the other one that's really come out, again, a bit of a surprise, but maybe not really when I think about the number of people who ask me about crypto. 18.4% of Australians now own some sort of cryptocurrency.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I mean, that's one in five. I think the Australian population is about 30 million right now. So that's like 5 or 6 million out there in Australia that either own or have owned cryptocurrency in the past. And that's really quite incredible to think that, you know, almost one in every five people that you walk past on the street has owned cryptocurrency. It's not something that I would have imagined a few years ago, to be honest.
What's fascinating about that is the age distribution is sort of what I would expect insofar that, you know, younger people are more aligned. But I'm also interested to see that even some of the older cohorts are continuing to venture in. And in fact, I had a note from someone the other day who's said, my baby boomer parents have just bought into crypto. So it's, you know, across the board, really.
Yeah, so this is a trend we've been seeing since we launched Independent Reserve back in 2013. So when we originally launched, you know, I think our typical customer was an early technology adopter, probably male, you know, between the age of 25 and 30, maybe. And they were a pretty small investor. And then as the industry matures, as people get more comfortable with just the idea of having a cryptocurrency as an investment, we're seeing older investors, larger investors. So we've really seen the SMSF area become really popular with, I guess, our own users. So we launched SMSF accounts, I think, in 2015, 2016, and we've seen that become really popular. A lot of people using SMSFs to invest into this area.
And interestingly, there are some state variations. Victoria is leading the way at 20%.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think maybe that's due to a few of the early cryptocurrency exchanges launching in Victoria. So maybe there was a little bit more education early on. But yeah, it's an interesting stat.
Well, I was fascinated by that. I actually said to your guys the other day, you know, next time it would be really interesting to get a split between those in the city and those in the bush and then the country. Yeah, okay. Because what I've found from certainly some of my research is that there's much more interest than you might think out in the bush.
Anecdotally, I would agree with you. I guess we don't have the numbers from this survey, but it'll be a really interesting one for next year's survey, absolutely. But yeah, look, I have personally I guess, you know, every now and then I look at our own customers, and there's a lot of customers from places that I haven't heard of. So it is quite interesting how the penetration has gone outside of the cities. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the other thing is, obviously, the question then is, so have you made money or have you lost money? And about 42.7% say they've actually grown their wealth through crypto, and about 21.8% said, well, might have lost a bit. So there's a bit of a 2-to-1 ratio there.
Yeah, so I guess Bitcoin hit its all-time high last week, or maybe earlier this week. It's hard to keep track. So I guess at an all-time high, you know, if you've ever bought Bitcoin and just held it, you would have made money by definition. So, you know, we've seen the price of Bitcoin increase exponentially since its launch. So most people would have made money. Although, of course, if you trade each day, then yeah.
That's always the issue, isn't it? And there is a big, I see quite an interesting divergence in my surveys between those who basically bought and hold and are just riding the curve up, and those who are trading and trading in, trading out, riding the dip, you know, trading the dip. And of course, the thing with trading is you might well do well, but you also might do badly as well. So it's an interesting conundrum.
Yeah, it's a risky business when you trade. I think everyone usually understands that. So we have a product called AutoTrader on Independent Reserve. Maybe it's not named correctly now that I think about it, but what it basically lets you do is it lets you invest small amounts over time. So you kind of average your way in, and that tends to smooth out the peaks and the troughs a little bit. So that's an interesting way to get into cryptocurrencies, because it is very, very, very volatile. You know, like I think 2 days ago it was 20% higher than it was early this morning. But if you kind of average your way in, then you tend to do it at a, you know, less risky way.
Well, it's interesting because actually that concept of buying at average is one that, of course, is traditionally quite useful in the stock market as well, because it's very hard to pick the tops and the bottoms and to try and, you know, trade exactly at the right point. But averaging over time actually works often quite well.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely.
What's interesting also is you've got some information in the survey with regard to those investing and how much they're investing. And there's a considerable number of people investing more than $500 a month into crypto. Mm. And there are also some putting more than $1,000 a month. So, again, it's not just sort of a few cents here and there. This is some serious money.
Yeah, absolutely. So I looked at our exchange volumes yesterday, and we had traded about $80 million in the past 24 hours. So that, I think that's the highest volume we've ever had. So we're really seeing larger amounts move into this space, and not just at the retail level. So if you look at the institutional adoption of cryptocurrencies over the last 12 months, we've seen some big allocations from hedge funds all around the world. We've seen listed companies put some of their treasury into this area as a way to hedge against inflation. And we've seen some large banks enter this space. So there are large banks now launching. So the largest bank over in Singapore is launching an exchange. They announced that about 1 month ago. So as you see this larger institutional adoption, then you also see larger amounts of money flow into this space.
Yes, and you and I think last year spoke about the maturing of Bitcoin in particular, and crypto more generally. And, you know, there are other ones in Ethereum and those sorts of things. But there is now serious institutional money coming in, and the number of financial organizations around the world are definitely engaged. Of course, PayPal made some significant announcements last year as well. So you can definitely, I think, argue that the journey has taken a whole new step over the last 12 months or so.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's been really interesting watching this evolve, because it's very different to most other asset classes that begin in an institutional way and then trickle down to retail. Whereas this has really gone the opposite. So the trajectory of Bitcoin has been the opposite of most other asset classes, where it really began as a grassroots movement, a very much a retail-driven thing. The institutions mocked it. They said it'll, you know, it's got no chance to survive. It'll never do anything. But then, you know, what's the saying? First they ignore you, then they mock you, they fight you, they join you. I think we're at the, they're about to join us.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting because you actually asked some specific questions on trust and confidence, right, with regard to crypto and Bitcoin. And it's quite clear that the younger cohorts are much more on song with it, much more willing to trust it, whereas older people are considerably more cautious.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, if I was to put myself into the shoes of an 18-year-old right now, I mean, as challenging as that is, it'd almost be living in a world where you couldn't remember a world where Bitcoin didn't exist. And the longer Bitcoin is around, the more that will be the case. So as we see these people, you know, get older, get more disposable income, cryptocurrencies will just become more and more normal as when it'll reach the point where no one will think twice about investing in cryptocurrencies. Mm. Like, we're not quite there yet. And of course, older people that still remember a world where they didn't exist, they still see it as a new thing, and people tend to be naturally quite suspicious of new things. But younger people don't have these hang-ups because it's just always been around as far as they're concerned.
And it was interesting because the first time this year you included a question about where the value of Bitcoin would be in 2030, right? And you actually picked $30,000.
Yeah, right. So we got that one wrong.
Well, what's interesting is most people in the responses also got the answer wrong, because quite a few people said, no, it's going to be way lower than that by 2030. So that's interesting.
I mean, it's hard to know where it's going to be in 2030. So we did the survey, I think, in November last year. So it's already slightly out of date. The market's moved a lot since then. I think Bitcoin was probably about 20K when we did the survey, and it's gone a lot higher in the last few months. I mean, it's obviously a very, very volatile asset class. I don't know where it's going to be tomorrow or next week, but most projections and most models place it, you know, going a lot higher over the next few years.
Mm, well, you can go onto YouTube and you can see people making wonderfully huge, extravagant projections. You know, I think it's true to say nobody knows, right? I
mean,
there are a number of factors which are very positive. You know, depth and penetration, the use is wider. There are also, of course, some risks, both within the crypto world itself and looking beyond crypto to the broader economy and even central bank digital currencies. Those are all big factors which are going to create cross currents. But nevertheless, if you compare, you know, where we've come from, chances are it's probably going to continue at some rate of knots. The question is, is what rate of knots, right? And who knows?
100%. I mean, it's. I guess once you get on YouTube, you know, you have to be careful not to get stuck into an echo chamber where you just keep hearing the same things repeated by different people. It's important to remember that a black swan can always happen. There can be a COVID-like event in cryptocurrencies that no one expects. No one expects. You know, could possibly happen, but once it does, then people look back at it and think, well, that was obvious. But yeah, it's important to be aware of the risks, of course.
And it's just worth reflecting quickly, because you did include a question on COVID, and 35.9% did actually have a reaction to the fact that COVID was there, and they sort of said, well, maybe I won't transact because of it.
Yeah, so I guess COVID's had a very complex effect on cryptocurrency. So there was the underlying, I guess, effects of the quantitative easings that we've seen around the world due to the fact that there was, that, you know, there were a lot of people, not at work, and that, you know, the governments needed to provide for all those people. And I think that was one of the underlying reasons why we saw the increase in the price over the last year, because people looking for a hedge against inflation. But then I guess the flip side is, you know, people having less confidence, less disposable income, so perhaps less willing to invest into something that, you know, would still be viewed as a risky asset. So yeah, it was an interesting impact in that way.
And there were two other insights which I thought were just worth talking about. The first is the gender divide. This is still a male reserve, isn't it, if I can use that term, 1 to 4.
Yeah, I mean, It's an interesting one, and I guess a lot of people have tried to address it in different ways to encourage more women into this area. I guess traditionally, you know, things that are risky and things that involve technology tend to attract more males for whatever reason, and I'm not going to get into a debate as to why that is. I've learned my lessons there. but I 100% agree that it'd be great to encourage more women into this area, more women into blockchain technology, There's, yeah, I mean, we can all learn a lot from women, I think, and the way they look at the world a little bit differently than.
Well, I, without wanting to sort of generalize too much, I think what I see in my surveys is a little bit more caution, a little more, I'd like to learn more about it before I get into it, whereas perhaps some males say, oh yeah, give it a go, they take more risks. But nevertheless, I'm also seeing in my own surveys a significant rise in interest from females and an intention potentially to invest coming through in the crypto world too. So maybe we'll see that begin to adjust over time as sort of the thing continues. I'm not sure necessarily that we should say, the guys are technical wizards and the ladies aren't. I think that's way too simplistic.
I think guys just tend to, on average, have a different risk profile to women. But I think as you see the industry mature, the asset class mature, I think women will definitely come around to it. There's really no reason why they wouldn't, I don't think.
And the other interesting, oh, you mentioned it briefly, but I want to come back to it. The superannuation side of it, I think it's really interesting because, the concept of actually putting some of your superannuation within crypto might at first blush look a little bit risky, but actually it's something which more people are doing.
I mean, look, I definitely agree it's risky. I wouldn't advocate putting all of it in or even large amounts in. But if you take the view that over the long term, this asset class has a huge upside. Obviously there's short-term volatility and no one knows how much it'll be worth next week. But most people's retirement funds tend to be long-term funds. So, I look at my retirement funds as money that I won't need for another 20 years, and I'd be happy to put it into an asset class that, may drop by 20% tomorrow, but I believe is got a very high chance of outperforming other asset classes over the next 10, 15, 20 years. So I think it's not an irrational thing to do. I think, right now an SMSF is really the only way to do it, which is why we're seeing a lot of interest from people with SMSFs and people creating SMSFs just for the purpose of investing into this area. I think over time we'll see larger, I guess, industry. I mean, at some point, the industry is going to have to start allocating into this area, and I think that's when we're going to start seeing proper institutional adoption. It's probably 2 or 3 years away at least, and it probably won't start in Australia, but it will come.
And a couple of interesting stats there. The average age of a self-managed super fund customer was 48, according to your survey, and the median amount traded was $62,000.
I guess that probably corresponds to 20 or 30% of the total super, I would say, at that age. I mean, I don't have all those numbers, but that'll be my guess. And that's pretty aggressive, but it's not unreasonable, I think.
No, it is fascinating. And, I think that the overall survey really gives quite a good read on the state of play. And if you go back 2 or 3 years, very different from even when we were chatting a couple of years ago. This has definitely, matured and developed. So if we think ahead, a couple of sort of questions spring to mind. One is we got Bitcoin, we got Ethereum. How do you see those two playing out over the next year or two?
So I think they've got, very different use cases. So the Bitcoin use case has now really turned into a digital gold. It's an asset class with inbuilt scarcity. It's something that can't be manipulated, inflated. It's really, in many ways, it's something you can really trust because no one can screw with it in any way. Like, you can compare it to a gold, but even that, there could be a meteor with lots of it and you could convert, and all of a sudden the supply is not what you expected it to be. The Bitcoin supply is so predictable and it's what people really love. So that's the Bitcoin use case. The Ethereum use case has always been the world computer. So it's really a computing platform where people can build other things on top of. And we've seen a lot of really innovative things built over the last 1 or 2 years. There are applications where you can invest Ethereum, they'll pay you returns and they'll pay you various dividends and all that kind of stuff. It's still a very nascent space. It's still quite immature. It's still very, very risky. But Ethereum is beginning to fulfill the promise of the platform on which other things can be built. And the value of Ethereum really comes from its usefulness as a platform for other people to build on top of. It may definitely be disrupted by other platforms that come in the future that may be more useful than Ethereum. So I think it's more of a risky play. Whereas Bitcoin now has these network effects, and the fact that its brand is so well known, it'd be very hard to disrupt it as this asset that you basically just buy and hold and trust the scarcity. They are obviously quite different. I'm not going to tell you which one to buy, though, Martin.
No. But that is really the point, right? And I always get a bit frustrated when I see all of these crypto coins and currencies all wrapped in together, and people are making grand statements about the whole market, right? The point is, they are very different. They have actually got a very different use case. They're structured differently. They're priced differently. They're even traded differently. So it's really important to do your work and basically understand the differential between them, rather than actually just bucketing all cryptocurrencies together. And, this matures, I think that divergence is going to get ever more significant.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I mean, look, that goes for any investment, you know, anything you put, anything that you invest in and put your own money in, you should do the research and understand what it does. If you buy some shares in a company, you know, you should read the reports. You know, how is this company performing? What does the company do? Like, just really basic things. And the same goes for cryptocurrencies. It's really no different.
Yeah, as I keep saying to people, do the work, do the research, you know, keep digging around. Just don't take that high level headline tip from somebody, a bit on the internet or somewhere else, right? Because that is the way that's going to be paved, not necessarily with gold, but something a lot worse. But nevertheless, you know, there are some really interesting developmental signs in this sector. And I guess last question for today is, what do you think the tussle between the, you know, the Bitcoins of this world or the Ethereums of this world and the central bank digital currencies is going to look like? Because we've got more examples now of central banks around the world beginning to put their toe in the water. We've got China, of course, handing out digital currencies to particular cities. And I just wonder whether you've got a view on this, how this tussle might play out ahead.
So that's quite a complex question. I guess there's a lot of different parts to it. So I guess the first thing to address is that the digital currencies issued by banks are very different to, say, an Ethereum or a Bitcoin. So they're controlled by one entity. They can be manipulated. They can be inflated. They don't really have, you know, any of the properties of, say, a Bitcoin. The only property that they share maybe is the technology behind it, which is really, you know, not the most interesting. I guess it's not what makes cryptocurrencies interesting. So I think that the central banks will most likely issue their own currencies, and this will give them various efficiencies. This will mean maybe they can track payments better. It means, you know, they will know how much you owe them in your income tax, you know, before even you do, because they've known exactly how much money you've spent and on what, and it makes it completely automated. And maybe with that, they can cut down on fraud. They can cut down on a whole bunch of things, right? Whereas a cryptocurrency like a Bitcoin is really the antithesis of that in many ways, because it's not controlled by any entity. It can't be manipulated. It's built in a way to let you be your own bank. This is, you know, a thing that regulators and banks have kind of struggled to come to grips with in many ways, because it takes the control away from them. So we've seen a response by regulators around the world. So, you know, a part of the ecosystem that regulators can regulate are exchanges, which are the on-ramps and the off-ramps from this new, you know, from the traditional economy into this, I guess, new system. So regulators are introducing new rules that exchanges, you know, for things that exchanges need to do to, make sure that from a regulated point of view that they don't lose control over this whole area as it increases. So we've seen, you know, some exchanges push back on this. Regulators kind of, you know, not really care that much about what exchanges think, because the industry still isn't that big. But I think this will be a tussle that you'll see play out over the next two or three years, more regulation coming in on exchanges around the world. So it'll be interesting to watch.
And of course, the know your customer regime in Australia is actually quite advanced. And so actually the whole question of being anonymous is actually less likely to be true now because of the way that that process now works.
Yeah, so all exchanges in Australia have been under the realms of AUSTRAC for about 2.5 years now, I think.
Yep.
So every exchange has to identify every customer and has to abide by pretty much the same rules as a bank or any other institution in Australia.
And that obviously gives some level of comfort in terms of what's going on and how it's being managed and controlled. Well, I really appreciate your time today, and I found that a really interesting exploration of the current dynamic. And we shall have to come back again down the track, because this thing's moving very quickly, isn't it?
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Thank you very much for your time today, Adrian.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Thanks.
Okay, bye.